Let's start not with the disturbing current events, but with the richness of the liturgy. We just celebrated the great feast of Corpus Christi, the solemnity of the body and blood of Christ. That was yesterday. One of the high points of the year, and one of the feasts that's especially important to us and to anyone who loves Jesus in the Eucharist. And now we are in the days between Corpus Christi and the solemnity of the Sacred Heart, or if you want to extend it, the Sacred Heart and the Immaculate Heart, because the two hearts are always together, always uniting. So it's a very special time, even though it's technically 12th week of ordinary time. We're enriched by the bread from heaven and united with this divine heart, which loves us to an immeasurable degree. And that's where we are. It's a great thing to keep pondering the love of God revealed in the heart of Jesus. Okay, well, that's our spiritual foundation. Now, we also know that at the same time, in fact, on the very feast of Corpus Christi, the Americans decided to bomb Iran, and that has disturbed pretty much the whole world. I haven't followed it too closely, but it's enough to know that once Americans get into a war, start a war or whatever, they're saying they didn't start a war. But anyway, there's certainly a war unfolding in the Middle East, and it's a very unstable region anyway, so to drop more bombs on the area is disturbing. And also, counter to the very thing we were celebrating yesterday, Corpus Christi is the feast of unity, right? One bread, one body. What unites us is Jesus Christ himself and his sacrifice for all of us. We are all children of the same Father and fed with the same food from heaven. So it's a sad contrast. And then, with our awareness of troubling news in the Middle East, we start reading from chapter 12 of the book of Genesis, the call of Abram. A series of readings that plants us right in that region of the world. But Abram, as far as we know, he was originally from what we call Iraq, and then his father's Terah. They traveled when, I think Abram was still young, up to Haran, which is somewhere in what we call Syria, northern Syria. And that's where he is in Syria when the Lord speaks to him. That's the beginning of today's reading. And says, okay, now go to a land that I will show you. And he travels south and southwest down into what we call Syria, Jordan, then into what we call Israel, Palestinian territories, and that whole region, which is the very area that is being bombed by Iran today, and the very people that are bombing Iran as well. The very strange thing about that war, Israel and Iran are actually not that close to each other. They don't have any common border. So in order to fight, they have to be passing over these other countries, Iraq, Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, And all of those countries are in very unstable condition politically. So that's why to have a war there is very disturbing. Okay, well, there's Abram. Let's focus especially on his journey because he is the prototype of the pilgrim of faith. Or since we're in the Jubilee year and the theme is Pilgrims of Hope, Abram is the prototype of a pilgrim of hope. So he's a great model for us to ponder and to return to. He's the very first who actually lived by faith and journeyed by faith, the very first to actually put his faith into practice that we have anyway. The first 11 chapters of Genesis are considered prehistory. But once we get to Abram, we're talking about history, recorded living people who lived in specific places and who followed God in very specific ways. So here's Abram, our father in faith, and actually the father of the great monotheistic religions of the world. A very large portion of the human family traces its spiritual roots back to this guy, Abram. And the first thing Abram hears from God is, I'm going to make you a great nation, and all the communities of the earth will find blessing in you. He promises that he is going to be the patriarch of countless people. Okay, so here's Abram. He's up in Haran with his father, although some traditions say that his father died by this time. And he hears the Lord, whom he doesn't know. He doesn't know his name. He doesn't know who he is. And he doesn't see anything. It's simply a message, a word. Go forth from the land of your kinsfolk and from your father's house to a land that I will show you. Not very much to go on. We wish we could hear Abram conversing with the Lord, like with Moses. Remember when Moses meets the Lord in the burning bush and he says, well, what's your name and what do you want me to do? And I'm not really very good at this. And Moses goes back and forth with God in that interaction. And we understand more about who Moses is and who God is. But in this case, no, we don't really know much of Abram. And God doesn't say much either about himself. Simply go forth. Leave your family, your father's house, and go to a land that I will show you. Maybe it's striking even in modern times, but if you go back to those days, that was unthinkable. To leave. If a person's very identity is, and you can see this even in the names, is based on his father and his land, where he's from and who he's from. That's who you are. So to leave your father's house is like is to lose your very identity, your security. And to leave your land is to leave your identity as a person, right? Because everyone is so-and-so, son of so-and-so, or so-and-so of such and such a place. So to have those cut off is to be completely vulnerable, for one thing, but also without a sense of who you are. So psychologically and culturally, very radical. But even religiously, because in those days, Abram, we don't know his religious background, but everybody had their religion. They had their gods, and their gods were the gods of their fathers and the gods of their territory. And everybody believed that when you go to a different territory, you're going into the domain of some other gods. Unless you bring your gods with you, and then you have a war between your gods and the gods of the place where you go. That's how they thought. And so to leave is, and to say, for God to say, I'm going to show you the place, implying I'm going to travel with you, I'll be with you when you get to that strange land, is just a radical shift. Hard to imagine. That's why Abram is such a great figure. That's why he is a patriarch. Because he's the model of the journey of faith, or the journey of hope. The model of someone who trusts in God at the cost of everything else. Surely his relatives and neighbors thought he lost his mind. Almost surely. Because he didn't even know where he was going. What did he tell them? I'm just going somewhere. I'll find out when I get there. It's surprising that his nephew, Lot, decided to come with him. We don't know why exactly. Maybe he's young and ambitious and looking for adventure. But Abram is going purely on faith. Now, is faith crazy? No, it's not crazy. It's not insanity. It's trust in God. And the important thing is hearing, listening, discerning, and following God. And that's true for us as much as it is for Abram. We're not just going off and doing whatever we want or whatever happens to come along. No, we're following a call. How can we distinguish between the call of the Lord and some weird ideas that might pop into our head or might be suggested by our culture, but that takes discernment. Now, we don't hear anything about Abram's discernment, but he must have deeply explored the possibility that this was real, and maybe it wasn't. But he has this conviction that he must follow this message which he received. And he does it. He's 75 years old. And he leaves his homeland. He takes his stuff with him, and people, and goes off to the land of Canaan. He had never been there. Who knows what he heard about the place. Travel. Even nowadays, travel in those regions is not that easy, especially with the war going on. But anyway, I mean, Syria has just undergone an overthrow of their government. Lebanon is on a state of collapse, practically. Jordan's a little more stable. But anyway, and we know what's happening in Israel. Israel's in war with Hamas in Gaza on the western side, and with Iran farther to the east. So here he travels. He gets there. When he finally gets to Shechem, which apparently was understood to be a sacred place before he got there, they call it the sacred place, and I don't know what the terebinth of Moreh is, but that's when the Lord appears to him. So he has not seen the Lord yet. He's only heard this message. And then the Lord appears, so he has a vision of some kind, and the Lord says, to your descendants I will give this land. So, okay, this is the land that the Lord will give to my descendants. Now remember, he has no children, he has no descendants. And he's 75 years old. But then he keeps moving, as if to say, not just this land, Shechem, but more. So he goes to Bethel, and he goes, and then at the end he ends up journeying by stages to the Negev. But Negev is the southern part of what we would call Israel. Maybe down into, I can't remember. Anyway, that's kind of a desert region. So maybe he went to the Negev because there weren't that many people there. Like, you can't just go traveling into people's territory and not run into opposition, as we know. But he's not worried about any of that. He's just doing what the Lord says. Now, I say, this is the prototype of the journey of faith. And I hope you have this awareness that when you make a decision of faith, people who know you, especially family members, close friends, neighbors, are going to say or suspect there's something wrong with you because you're doing something that is not based on worldly standards. You're abandoning your father's house and your father's people. You're somehow violating your culture or the expectations of your family. I hope you have that experience, because I'm not saying anything against families, but that's very important. But we're not, our identity is no longer based on our family or our culture. It's based on the Lord. Once we're baptized, we belong to a new territory. And this is where the journey of faith results in some opposition. I remember the early stories of Father Francis. When he experienced his conversion, he was working for his father. His father had, I think, a tailoring business, and his brother was involved. But when he decided to enter religious life, go to the seminary, his brother was furious with him. Like, he was jeopardizing the success of the business. Okay, well, I don't know if our family members are furious with us, but, I mean, this is the kind of thing that can happen. I mean, you're violating someone else's expectations and putting God's will above everything else. It's not irrational. It's not crazy. It's faith. Faith, the journey of faith surpasses the rational reason. Now, we're not violating reason. We're not saying, I'm deliberately doing something dangerous, I'm deliberately doing something that is going to cause division and loss. No, but it's with the awareness of these costs and go forward. Okay, that's where we are. Now, we are traveling in a world of political instability, military conflict, cultures, families, all kinds of expectations. And our own nature itself has a tendency to misread things. That's today's gospel. We have this wooden beam in our eyes. And our natural tendency is always to blame other people. That's how wars start, isn't it? It's your fault, so I have to bomb you because you're the bad guy. I'm not the bad guy. You are, so I'm going to bomb you. That's wars start with a lot of wooden beams. And we all have this condition. So we're called by faith to journey forward, but we're also called to recognize our limitations, our natural weaknesses, our tendency to misjudge or rashly judge others. God knows all that. God knows all that. He's journeying with us. In fact, he's feeding us with himself. That's why we celebrated with great joy yesterday. We're not just wandering around with nothing in the darkness. We're journeying with the Lord, fed by the Lord, filled with the life of the Lord, guided by the Spirit of the Lord. It's the world that's in darkness. But yes, we have our limitations. So the more we depend on him, the more successful or fruitful our journey of faith will be. And we're following in the footsteps of Abraham, our father in faith, but with more than Abraham had, because more has been revealed to us. So we have greater confidence, or we should have greater confidence in the Lord than Abraham. And with this confidence, we continue our pilgrimage of hope.